Welcome to Radio Times. I'm Mike Inscott in for Marty Moscowane. You don't want to be inside of writer Fletcher Wortman's head. Intrusive thoughts of death, violence, and loathing have dominated his brain for most of his 25 years, causing depression, suicidal behavior, and finally a breakdown. Wortman has written about his painful struggles in his new book, Triggered, a memoir of obsessive-compulsive disorder. He joins us today to talk about his book and his journey to recovery. Fletcher, thank you so much for being with us.
Great to be here, Megan.
Also joining us in the studio is a therapist who helped Wortman recover and still helps him, Dr. Jonathan Grayson. He directs the Anxiety and OCD Treatment Center of Philadelphia. Thank you so much for being here, Dr. Grayson.
A pleasure.
And Fletcher, is there any time in your life where you remember not having these kinds of thoughts of death and dying and violence?
You know, the earliest instances I can remember were in second grade and having an environmental group come to my school and make some kind of claim. I don't even recall exactly what they said, but that if deforestation continued at the rate that it was going at, the Earth would run out of oxygen by 2006, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I just could not get that out of my head. I was terrified by that possibility. What could I do? What was happening? And that I think is probably one of the earliest instances I can recall.
And did you talk to somebody about this? Did you say to your mom or your dad or your teacher, "What are we going to do about this?"
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, their response was, "Well, that sounds a little questionable to begin with." And even so, oh, you know, he just has an overactive imagination. You know, he's just worrying. Stop worrying. Was a lot of the advice that I got, which unfortunately you have OCD isn't as simple to follow as it could be.
Did you know that you were different at an early age, or how did you see yourself in the world?
You know, I almost compare it to being colorblind, where there was something obviously fundamentally different about myself and my outlook and my way of perceiving things, but because I had no objective standard outside of my own experience, I couldn't really understand that. It just seemed to me like the way things were.
And what kind of a child were you? Were you quiet? You said you worried a lot, obviously, mm-hmm. but how did you present yourself to the world?
I was very well behaved. I was very, you know, I've loved writing and comedy and creativity and art, so I was... Those were a big part of my life too. But you know, I could become terribly anxious about things and fixate on them, and those could just take over for days or weeks on end.
Did you hide that anxiety?
When I could, you become very good, especially with the disturbing nature of intrusive thoughts. You eventually become very, very good at learning to conceal it. You don't want to tell people, "Oh my God, I'm terrified. I'm going to, you know, have a psychotic break and murder someone." You know, that's the kind of content that you're dealing with, but it's not something you feel comfortable sharing with people necessarily.
And you never, when people hear about OCD, they think automatically rituals, hand washing, counting. Those are the things that people are typically familiar with. But you didn't engage really in rituals.
No, it was all in my head. It was all almost entirely internal. The ritual for me would be telling myself, "Oh no, this horrible thing that you imagine, this terrible end of the world fear that you have, or this terrible thing you imagine yourself doing, none of that can happen." And of course, unfortunately, that wouldn't actually convince me, because it's just me reassuring myself. So I would repeat to myself over and over and over again, without really seeing a reduction in anxiety.
And Fletcher, did you have any thought that you could control what was going to happen if you did X, such as repeating that thought over and over, or did you have no control?
You know, it really wasn't a question. There wasn't really any magical thinking involved. There wasn't any like actual magical ritual aspect to it. It was more that I need to convince myself of this. I need to have this argument with myself until I can win this debate conclusively, and which of course can never happen.
And could you sleep at night?
Sometimes I've had really pretty upsetting dreams. I've had sleep disrupted when I was extremely symptomatic.
And Dr. Jonathan Grayson, does OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, typically start in childhood, or does it sometimes start later?
It can start at all ages. Typically, it can start in childhood. Usually, the time between, let's say, 17 and 25 is also another major time. Fletcher brings up a really important point, because most people, when they think of rituals, they think it has to be something behavioral. And he was basically constantly doing rituals in his head. In other words, trying to convince himself, I know that this isn't going to really happen, or I'm not that kind of person, because I don't really want to do those things. But how do I know I don't want to do those things? Because if I don't want to do those things, why would I have these thoughts? You know, so, and as he said, it wasn't magical. And there are other people who will have kind of a slightly more magical ritual. But in every case, people with OCD are too smart to believe it will really work.
And Jonathan Grayson, I have wondered sometimes with children. We see children engage in little rituals, such as not stepping on a crack or counting or trying to control their anxieties and their fears and thinking, if I do this, then this won't happen. So do all children engage a little bit in this? And at what point should a parent be worried?
Well, I think, first of all people do. So, right, everybody has little rituals. And the question is, at what point does it start, you know, taking control of them or getting out of hand? A lot of times, children will who are going to have OCD will kind of go in and out of it. So, you know, when a parent starts to see it, it is true they might temporarily outgrow it. We always kind of want them to bring the kid in, because we actually don't know if this child is one who's going to, this is just going to be a short phase, or this is going to get very serious.
And Fletcher Wortman, you started going to church and you attended Catholic services. Mm-hmm. How did that faith interact with what at this point was already, I guess, a disorder?
Yeah, geez. You know, I was not raised in an old school fire and brimstone type family or religious community, but my OCD sort of turned it into that. You know, mm-hmm. OCD latches onto the scariest, darkest possibilities at any possible moment. So it sort of eventually concluded, well, if I don't do all of this perfectly, I'm going to go to hell. So what did that mean for me? It meant somehow I got, for example, the notion that if I repeated the phrase, I promise my soul to the devil in my head, and got through that and said that sentence to myself in its entirety, I would be damned to hell. So I would spend entire afternoons, my brain, you know, kind of perversely going back to that phrase over and over again. You know, whenever you try not to think about something, it just comes back harder and stronger, and trying to cut myself off. And then as I grew older, you know, prayer and again internal type rituals both became a way of trying to cope with that.
But you managed to be a really good student at the same time, mm-hmm. and do other things, be in plays. Was your brain just working overtime, or did you do your homework while you were thinking the other stuff?
Yeah, it's exhausting, but there is, you know, if you work hard enough, and again, if you're not aware that there's any alternative, you learn how to function with OCD. And to a certain extent too, I think being driven and being, you know, really wanting to please people and really wanting to be the best at things, that had an obsessive compulsive aspect to it as well.
We're talking, that is Fletcher Wortman. He has a new memoir called Triggered, a memoir of obsessive compulsive disorder. And we're also joined in the studio by Dr. Jonathan Grayson, who is a therapist who's worked with Fletcher. And Dr. Grayson, what is the role of religion? Or is there a role, or is this something that people with OCD latch on to sometimes?
You know, you put it perfectly with your last statement, sometimes. You know, there are some people with OCD for whom religious faith is very useful. There are some people where that is the source of their OCD. You know, 'cause the thing about OCD is these people are very creative, right? The core of creativity is going, what if? But in this case, it's what if? No, I don't want that to happen. And creativity is not for art. Creativity is survival. Where's the tiger? How can I make sure it doesn't eat me? So, for, you know, what is most important to that person? So how do you know that you're not going to be, you know, damned? Or, you know, like, I can't say this statement. Well, how can I be sure I'm not really secretly saying this statement? And you keep trying to convince yourself. And research has shown us that the only people who are actually certain are stupid.
I'm gonna pitch this out there, and I'm fond of ridiculous pop culture analogies. It's kind of like the boggart in Harry Potter. Which comes out of the cupboard, and it takes the shape of whatever you're most afraid of in mm-hmm. that moment. So it could be,
Your disorder does.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. So it could be religion. It could be violence. It could be sexuality. It could be disease. It could be any number of things.
And it just comes at you. As Fletcher was talking, Dr. Grayson, I was imagining a rut being worn into his brain by all these thoughts just continuously happening and happening and happening. Is there something we can see in the brains of people who've had OCD for a long time? Are there changes? Are there areas that are different?
We can see, I'm going to answer this two ways. There is no test that I can stick somebody under an MRI or a PET scan and say, oh, there's the OCD. We can see if people go through treatment, we can see some changes in the brain. So that kind of gives us an idea of where OCD is occurring in the brain, but not so much, there's a definite rut or something like that worn in.
Does it get harder to treat when people get older and older, or if they haven't had treatment?
One of the wonderful things about OCD is prognosis is almost independent of severity and length of time. So sometimes people who have had it for a very long time and are very severe, basically they're sick of it. They're ready to do treatment. I guess we'll be talking about treatment a little bit, but the core of treatment is the person is basically intolerant of uncertainty. They don't want X to happen. And of course, who would want to be going to hell or who wants to go crazy and kill someone? But the fact is, none of us know what's going to happen. I don't know if I'm going to go crazy tonight. I don't think I will, but I can't be sure. So part of dealing with uncertainty is, how would I live with this if that happens? In the same way that people know that they could be maimed and paralyzed in a car crash, and they get in the car anyway. They talk on their cell phone and even raise the odds. And their brilliant plan is, I'll wait till the crash happens. We're trying to get the OC thoughts to be like that. Not that they're safe or they know they're not going to do this, but let me try to deal with it when it happens. But to do that, you have to consider, well, how would I cope with this if this ever happened, whatever it is?
And as part of therapy, people are also exposed to their fears, and they are triggered, name of your book, Fletcher. So how does that work? We have about a minute till we go to break.
The analogy that really seems to resonate with people for me is, I had friends at the OCD unit at McLean Hospital who were afraid of contamination, the very classic disease hand-washing OCD. What they would have to do is take a bucket of biohazardous materials, needles, used Kleenex, whatever, or they have to go to the bathroom, to the toilet, and then just stick their hand in. I could see wincing a little bit, and people seem to have that visceral reaction to that. That's something no one would ever choose to do, but the purpose of it is to help you confront your fear without resorting to ritual reassurances.
And you have to do that over and over. We're going to go to a break, Dr. Grayson, but I'll have you respond to that in a moment. We're talking with Dr. Jonathan Grayson, who is the head of the Anxiety and OCD Treatment Center of Philadelphia. And also we're talking with author Fletcher Wortman about his new memoir, Triggered, which describes his struggles with obsessive compulsive disorder. We'll talk more after our break. Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499 if you want to join the conversation. You're listening to Radio Times.
Supporting WHYY, Act 2 Playhouse presents the classic Broadway musical My Fair Lady. My Fair Lady features such memorable Lerner and Lowe songs as Wouldn't It Be Lovely, Get Me to the Church on Time, and I Could Have Danced All Night. Starring Tony Braithwaite as Henry Higgins, My Fair Lady, directed by Bud Martin, runs at Act 2 Playhouse's intimate 130-seat theater in Ambler, April 24th through June 3rd. Tickets and information at act2.org or 215-654-0200.
WHYY FM. You listen, you enjoy, and you know you're going to make a donation. So why not just do it now? And if you do, you can enjoy YStream, our regular WHYY FM programming delivered online without membership breaks. Sign up for YStream by April 22nd. For more information and to make your donation now, visit whyy.org/YStream.
Abington Health supports WHYY. Their Orthopedic and Spine Institute is performing a procedure called anterior hip replacement. Using a mini incision and specifically designed surgical table, surgeons at Abington and Lansdale Hospitals are able to replace the hip joint through the front rather than the side, sparing muscles. The hospital stay and the recovery time are shorter, enabling patients to return more quickly to regular activities, like driving. More at abingtonhealth.org/bone.
Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Mike and Scott in for Marty Moscowane, and we're talking with author Fletcher Wortman about his new memoir, Triggered, which describes his struggles with obsessive-compulsive disorder. We're also joined by his therapist, Dr. Jonathan Grayson, who directs the Anxiety and OCD Treatment Center of Philadelphia. And Dr. Grayson, before our break, we had just started to talk about treatment. Is there a best practice type treatment that works for people with OCD, or is it a combination?
There actually is a best practice treatment. It's called exposure and response prevention. Amazingly, both the American Psychiatric Association and the American Psychological Association agree that for OCD, this is the first-line treatment, so how often do those groups agree? And in fact, among OC experts, virtually none of them disagree, regardless of what the research. We have found that it is easier to treat OCD than it is to change the behavior of mental health professionals.
How so?
Because the treatment's been around since 1984, and it is not easy to find treatment, and it's well publicized. And I think it's because there's some misconceptions about treatment. First of all, the therapist, I never make anybody do something. I mean, if you could do that, that would be wonderful in a way. It'd be easy, but we have to talk the person into it. And people hear the things that we do. Fletcher mentioned, sticking hands in the biohazardous things, and it sounds horrible and terrifying, like we're absolutely crazy. I mean, we are a little crazy. But there's nothing that we do that doesn't in some way happen normally. So, for example, I'm going to tell you one that you'll find horrifying. We'll have people chew ABC gum, already been chewed. And people go, oh, my God, that's terrible. They got sick, and that's terrible. It's an awful thing to do. It's dangerous. And, I agree that if I had a plate with my saliva in it, you probably would really balk at the idea of licking my saliva. But then I ask people, so when you were in college, how many people were you French kissing whom you did not know? Right. So actually, although this may be a risky behavior, it's one that people are quite willing to engage in the right circumstances. So we're doing things in a more purposeful way, but they always have an analog to what really happens. And after all, I think 10-hour gum versus French kissing, I think the gum is probably safer because it's older.
And how long does therapy typically last? Or is there a time or how long are patients with you?
It's quite variable. It depends. The very first step is really doing nothing. The first step is, have they been convinced that it makes sense for them to learn to cope with uncertainty in a logical way that begins to make sense because they agree they can't find any way to be certain? Treatment then can vary. It can be as short as a couple of weeks. It can be much longer.
And Fletcher, Dr. Grayson mentioned that a lot of mental health professionals are not on board with this treatment. You were actually not diagnosed for many years. What was your first diagnosis?
My first diagnosis came when I was 20 years old, and after a long semester of working with a counselor at my school's counseling center. And talking about, here are these horrible thoughts I would have, and then she would try to talk me out of them and work me through them and, what does this mean analytically? Do we have issues with our father here? That, which is exactly the opposite kind of thing that you need with OCD.
Meanwhile, you went online at some point and pretty much diagnosed yourself within moments.
Yeah, I do not recommend generally that people seek medical or psychiatric diagnoses online, but it was, it was in God bless Google, without that I might never have realized that what I had was a form of OCD.
But Dr. Grayson, it seems stunning that the counselor, after working with Fletcher for so many months, did not recognize this.
It's horrifying, but we still see, I still get clients coming to us who, because they weren't washing their hands or checking doors, nobody diagnosed the OCD. And I'd like to say we're really clever, but they walk in and they can tell us in a few sentences, and it's like, okay, it's OCD. So it's awful.
And in high school, Fletcher, you were on antidepressants, correct? Mm-hmm. Did that help you at all?
I was sort of in a coma for a couple of months. So, yeah, the obsession was reduced, but also, my ability to stay awake and drive a car without accidentally going through red lights was reduced a little bit as well. So it was...
The medications you were given at different points were big guns, it seemed like. Describe the side effects and just what you felt like.
There's been... they started me on Effexor, when I was in high school, which is a really powerful drug, and which is, you know, kind of just, you know, like as if they'd taken a shotgun and put it to my head, you know, yeah, that would have gotten rid of the OCD probably, but it would have gotten rid of a lot of other stuff too. So, you know, yeah, lots of exhaustion and overeating and all the other kind of nasty side effects they warn you about.
And Dr. Grayson, what is the role of medication in treatment?
OCD is both learned and biological, so there is a role for biology and medication, but meds don't change learning. So, you know, there's the core part that is the OCD that they help a little bit, but by the time a person's come to us, they've, as you were talking earlier, you know, has his mind gotten into a rut? Well, in a sense, it has. So we find medication alone maybe is good for 30 to 50%. Sometimes even medication is working. The person doesn't look any better because of the learned part. And generally, the meds that are useful are the SSRIs. People know there's Prozac or Celexa. On the average, they don't have side effects, but then different individuals will have severe side effects. So it's good there's one. Like, actually, some people don't have that side effect to Effexor, mm-hmm. but right, I've seen people where they get knocked out. And so the fact there are more than one is useful because you never know which one's going to work with someone. That part is, unfortunately, guessing.
Yeah, I've had a lot of success recently with Wellbutrin and Cymbalta. And I bring this up because I think there's still a lot of stigma in our society against using medication. And you know, the idea that you're almost somehow being brainwashed, and I really want to resist that because, you know, there are good meds and there are bad meds. There are good psychiatrists and there are bad psychiatrists. I've been fortunate enough to come to a place where my medication has really helped me. So,
but you did not want to take medication for quite some time.
Initially, I think I resisted that, and I resisted that partially because of that myth, you know, that in order to be creative and in order to be an individual, in order to be myself, I couldn't be on medication. When at the end of the day, you know, once I started getting proper treatment, it really helped me.
It's that trial period, though, when you're finding the right medication that sounds terrifying.
Yeah, that's nasty. Jeez.
and Fletcher, we've mentioned high school. How did your OCD change once you entered high school and also hormones came into play? How did you change? How did your disease change?
I was a mess. I was just an absolute mess. Lots of social anxiety, you know, avoiding social situations at all possible, not going out with friends, you know, locking myself in the bathroom during breaks, because of, you know, sudden sexual awareness. So a lot of the obsessions dealt with really uncomfortable sexual imagery and sexual content, which is, when you're a confused teenager anyway, having that stuff running through your head can be really unpleasant.
What did you do? You describe you went into the bathroom, you excused yourself, it became, your teachers knew that's what you were going to do. You stared at yourself in the mirror. What did you do?
I just hated myself as much as was physically possible, as much as hate can be used as an active verb, you know, something I was actually doing instead of feeling. I guess I somehow hoped that if I despised myself enough, I could whip myself into shape and I could make myself function and be popular and be liked and not have terrible thoughts. And doesn't quite work that way, unfortunately.
Let's take a phone call. We have Cindy joining us from Levittown. Hi, Cindy, you're on Radio Times.
Hi, good morning. Thank you.
Sure. Go ahead.
My question is primarily for the doctor. Is he familiar with a condition called PANDAS, PANDAS? My great niece very abruptly started at the age of 7 symptoms of OCD, which primarily involved around ritualistic behavior, very focused on religion. And she also became suicidal, at least in ideation. And I found online a doctor associated with Bryn Mawr Hospital, a psychologist, who had identified this condition, and she received therapy. She received low dosage SSRIs and was able to work through this over the course of a couple of years. And my concern is that these people, children, young adults, may be having an allergic reaction similar to PANDAS.
Thank you, Cindy. I'm going to let Dr. Grayson respond.
You weren't clear whether she also received antibiotics or if they did a blood titer to see if there was any strep, even though that can be at lower levels. PANDAS is a condition. It's not as common as people think. Everybody would kind of like to jump on it, where if a child has strep infection, they have a kind of sudden onset OCD. And if it is PANDAS...
What does that stand for, or what is it? sorry to put
you on the spot. I think they're these adorable Chinese animals.
It's like pediatric, autoimmune, I'm blocking on all the things. But we'll have to look that one up, but... So if it is PANDAS, usually that would be the treatment that they would get an antibiotic. Now, it is probable, it's not so much that strep throat is causing OCD. These are probably children who are going to have OCD anyway, but it's triggered under these circumstances. If the child didn't receive antibiotics and just received an SSRI, then treatment should have actually, it sounds kind of like normal treatment, which actually even with PANDAS we would do. So SSRIs are common, and hopefully the treatment she also received, or he, I wasn't sure, what was an exposure and response prevention. If not, that may be why it took a few extra years.
Thank you for that call, Cindy, and I hope that answered your question. And Fletcher, you managed to graduate high school despite all of this was going on. Did you have any friends? Were there any good moments in your high school years?
The toughest thing is explaining this without making myself sound like just another emo kid. So if that's anyone's response out there in radio land, you know, I completely understand. But I was terribly lonely in a lot of ways. And even when I did make friends, and even when I did have moments of success, and a lot of early self-esteem actually came from my writing, and came from sharing my writing and making jokes and reading at assembly and getting great feedback for that. But you know, there was still this, you know, loneliness and obsession and self-loathing, which I didn't really understand and was kind of, you know, isolated by.
As you left for college, you chose Swarthmore. Mm-hmm. Did you think of yourself as having an issue with mental illness, or how did you perceive yourself at that point in your life?
That's an excellent question, because what I kept trying to tell myself over and over again is, okay, I had some problems in the past, but they're over. They're done. I got over it. I'm better now. And it seems to me like that is an impulse that a lot of people who struggle with, you know, forms of mental illness have, you know, not wanting to give it a name, not wanting to go into exhaustive treatment, and not willing to, you know, one of the toughest things I had to deal with was accepting OCD doesn't have a cure. Medication can't just zap it and make it go away. ERP helps tremendously, but it doesn't prevent new obsessions from forming. It doesn't completely erase the old learning that I'd done.
So it's a chronic disease.
It is.
Sorts.
Yeah.
Dr. Grayson, how do people think about this if they don't have a diagnosis? Do you talk with people who come to see you? How did they perceive themselves, or what did they think was going on before they had a diagnosis?
Well, you know, people come in all different kind of everything you can imagine. Many people are quite relieved when we call it OCD, because up to that point, it's, I have this disease that no one else in the world has, and if that's true, I'm in deep trouble, because if I am the only one with it. So finding out that there's a name for it is usually very helpful. Probably the most important thing we do in the first sessions is help them understand what it is. Because, you know, even just having a name doesn't necessarily give them hope. So if they can see that there's a, you know, there's a form to it and it makes sense, that helps them quite a bit, because then they can see that, okay, there's probably a way out if these people can understand what I'm going through.
And Fletcher, did you start making that distinction eventually? This is not me, this is what I have?
Eventually, yeah. Although, again, the impulse there, once you get to that point, is to try to distance yourself from it and separate yourself from it and say, oh, no, it's not part of me anymore. It's something I've beaten. It's something I've cured. And I found that over the long term, acceptance and continuing treatment and maintenance is really what's, you know, it'll never get rid of my OCD, but it's improved my quality of life tremendously.
Let's take a call. We have Oscar joining us from Southwest Philadelphia. Hi, Oscar. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
Thank you for this show, by the way. My question is simply, I'm a parent of an 8-year-old who has been diagnosed with OCD, and I'm hoping that you all could talk about the day-to-day for a parent, whether or not a child is going through treatment, particularly if a child is going through treatment. But in any case scenario, how it could be, should be, what parents can do to support their child.
Thank you, Oscar. I'm going to let Dr. Grayson respond to that.
If I can answer this in 2 minutes, I'm incredibly good. I think it's really important for the parents to understand OCD, and there are a few really good books on that. So that at least they're not trying to argue with the child or say, don't worry, or things like that, because the child would love not to worry. Ultimately, there's kind of a balance. We don't want the parents to enable the child, but I really think the child needs to be in treatment so the parents can do this in an organized way. We don't want to... The child needs to understand what's happening and really needs a very supportive environment to figure out what's happening and how to change. So it's hard to give a really simple answer. I said I think it really needs to be in the ideal within the context of a good treatment program, because then the therapist can help the parents know when they should be stepping back a little bit, when they should certainly, any kind of improvement the child makes needs to be cheered, and reinforced, as opposed to, well, you're still not doing X.
But the parents must be part of the treatment process.
Usually, it's particularly at an 8-year-old level, yes. Sometimes if we have a child who's, let's say, between, 10 and 12, 10 and 14, it's more variable. The parents may be very involved. The child may be able to take off on their own. It depends on how much the child will buy into it.
And Fletcher, your parents were your absolute champions.
Yeah. I'm very grateful to my folks and to my family for the tremendous support that they gave me. If I could advise, coming at that kind of from the opposite perspective of the perspective as a child, two kind of conflicting pieces of information, which are that OCD is sometimes very difficult to explain and describe to someone who doesn't have it. So patience and understanding is necessary. And at the same time, OCD loves to use authority figures as a form of ritual, I may not know if I'm going to hell or not, or if I'm going to die or not, but maybe mom and dad know. And I bet mom and dad will know. So repetitive, incessant questioning, unfortunately, can use parents and outsiders as a form of ritual to make the OCD work worse. So I guess, trying to understand your child's condition as much as possible, trying to communicate with them, trying to get a sense of what's actually going on inside their head, may, and again, treatment and therapy and family counseling, I think can help give you a better sense of what exactly is going on and what's the appropriate response in the moment to it.
And we're coming up on a break, but Fletcher, it also sounds like your parents had infinite amounts of patience.
Yeah. No,
and compassion for your situation.
Yeah.
And you talk about that a bit in your book, and I thought it was interesting how you balanced also your teenage loathing for your parents along with your love.
Sure.
and that you feel for them. We're talking with Fletcher Woodman. His new book is Triggered, and we're also speaking with Dr. Jonathan Grayson, who directs the Anxiety and OCD Treatment Center of Philadelphia. You're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY.
Supporting WHYY, Fidelity Investments Bucks County Investor Center, located at 1520 Main Street in the Valley Square Shopping Center. Information at 1-800-FIDELITY or fidelity.com. Fidelity Brokerage Services, member NYSE SIPC.
The Philadelphia Shakespeare Theater supports WHYY. This spring, it's The Joyous Confusion of Illyria with Twelfth Night, directed by Carmen Kahn. Joining Twelfth Night in repertory is director Aaron Cromie's murderous and bloody Titus Andronicus, styled after the 19th century Grand Guignol. Performances run through May 20th. Tickets to Twelfth Night and Titus Andronicus available at 215-496-8001 or online at phillyshakespeare.org.
I'm Alex Chadwick. The Japanese call it 3/11, March 11th, a year ago, when a massive earthquake and tsunami triggered a nuclear crisis at the Fukushima Daiichi power plant. We're still feeling the impact of Fukushima and what it means for our energy future. Nuclear power after Fukushima. That's coming up on Burn from Sound Vision Productions and American Public Media.
Sunday afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
Supporting WHYY, Lincoln, introducing the new 2013 Lincoln MKS with available 16-speaker THX surround sound and independent suspension. More at Lincoln.com. Lincoln, now it gets interesting.
Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Mike and Scott in for Marty Moskowane. We're talking about obsessive compulsive disorder with writer Fletcher Wortman and therapist Dr. Jonathan Grayson. And Dr. Grayson, before our break, Fletcher mentioned how difficult it is to understand OCD and what it's like to have OCD when you yourself don't have it. And I met you before when we discussed a film that was produced locally called OC87 by Bud Clayman. And you put me through a little exercise back then, and I still have that tape. So why don't we hear that? You kind of explained to me what it's like to have OCD. So let's hear that.
Okay, I'd like you to write on the paper, I want, and put in the name of someone you love.
Okay. I want, say, my husband. I want Graham.
Now write to die a horrible, painful death.
Oh, geez. Do I have to write that? It feels very wrong to write this. Okay.
Mike, and would you like to cross that out?
Yes, I would love to cross that out.
Okay.
Okay.
Stop.
All right.
Why do you want to cross it out?
Because I don't want Graham to die a horrible, painful death.
And I believe you, but what's that have to do with crossing it out?
I don't know. It just feels wrong to have this in my handwriting. What?
Well, but it's just words. In fact, would you be willing to carry that in your wallet?
No.
Why?
Because it feels like if I had this in my wallet and I wrote it, that somehow that's going to make it come true.
Really? You actually believe that?
Well, no, if I think about it rationally.
Okay, so how about carrying it in your wallet for a week?
Nope.
And again, why?
Because it just feels wrong. I know that rationally, just me having these words in my wallet won't make a difference, but there is a part of me that thinks having these words in my wallet might cause something terrible to happen.
So here's the thing. You don't have OCD. And look at the problem you have with that. And the difference between you and a sufferer, that's what it's like for them all the time. You'll forget this in an hour. You know, most of the time people look at sufferers and, you know, they just look at it and think, oh, that's not a problem. I wouldn't have a problem with that. And yet we have something like this. And then suddenly, right, you're acting no different than a sufferer.
Can I throw this out now?
It's up to you.
I'm going to cross it out.
And now you've engaged in your first ritual.
That was an exercise Dr. Grayson put me through a while back. And Fletcher, when you returned to Swarthmore, you were in a residential treatment. You took off a semester from school. You actually were at that point diagnosed with OCD and getting treatment for OCD. So then you were better. You returned. But you didn't speak about what happened to you. What did you tell your classmates? Where did you say you were?
I told them I'd had stomach problems, and then I immediately regretted that because it sounds really gross. But I felt like I had to keep my story consistent, so there you go.
And then you describe in the book how people so casually use OCD. Oh, I studied so hard, I have OCD. Or people make these casual references to mental illness, and that started to bother you.
Yeah, it bugs me. You know, it's not something that I really take personally because it's such a part of our language now. You know, try to get through a week without using the word crazy. You know, it's just a part of our language and culture. But on the other hand, you know, I think that exercise that Dr. Grayson went through with you is just such a perfect example of that feeling. It's not about being detailed or being organized. It's about, you know, being confronted with these abominable thoughts and images almost continuously.
And you describe also in the book the therapy that you went to at Dr. Grayson's center. It sounds very painful.
Yeah, it's tough.
Hard work.
Yes, it is. And I'm extraordinarily grateful that I had the weeks and months that I had off to work on it on my own, because it's something that I'm sure I couldn't have just done in my spare time.
And I want to, Dr. Grayson, I want to talk about the cost of therapy too, because it seems like, for one, you have to be lucky to find a therapist who knows what works for OCD, who actually recognizes that you have OCD. But then there's also, I'm sure, a lot of cost involved. So for people who may not have insurance or have lacking coverage, how does all of that play out in terms of getting the right therapy to people?
I mean, that is a major problem. I mean, and primarily because we can't get more therapists to do the treatment. Again, it's not clear why a treatment's been around since 84.
Is it hard for the therapists?
You know, you're asking, is it hard for the therapists? And I mean, I do things that I think, wow, this is really gross. So that, I don't know. I don't really think that it's hard. So I'm not really sure, you know, why. I mean, I think there are different centers where there are different possibilities. We have some interns, so we can, you know, afford low-cost treatment. At the University of Pennsylvania, there's two programs, one run by Dr. Foa, one by Marty Franklin, and sometimes they're doing research so people can have lower-cost treatment. And we try to constantly train people so that there'll be more therapists who provide this treatment. One of the things Fletcher said, it's actually his fault. He was talking about people not understanding OCD, and one of the things he does, and most of our sufferers do, is they're really able to hide their symptoms well. Now, we call that behavior competence, because let's face it, it's like if somebody came to my session and I was having a difficult day and I was like, they'd be, wow, he has more problems than me. I don't want to talk to him. And so the difference between me and Fletcher is that he relies on his competence more often. I don't actually know. I mean, I hope I could, but I don't know if I could function as well as he did. Because he, you know, I think now, hopefully, with ERP, he, you know, has lots of times of freedom. Because our goal is so he doesn't have to rely on it. But when people come in who've had a really difficult time, they are constantly multitasking, you know, and they are functioning under this incredible anxiety and looking normal. A lot of our patients are people who are really admired by others. And so, you know, people think, well, they just do that because, you know, they'll describe the symptoms. They don't describe it like they're really in a wreck. They just say, I just do this and that. And they don't express how much anxiety. So the competence helps them, which is a good thing, but also allows people to misunderstand it and not take it as seriously.
And Fletcher, I want to get to that issue of competence, but a question about the cost of treatment. Mm-hmm. Did your parents' insurance cover all your treatment?
Yeah,
or?
We've been very lucky. The combination of insurance with my folks were able to foot the rest of the bill. I think it's a terrible problem, and I think, you know, if you look at the way insurance covers mental health care in this country, there are some real issues with it.
Because it's often toward medication and not therapy.
Right. We're you know, I think of it as, you know, if my brain was sort of like, another ridiculous metaphor, I'm sorry. My brain was like Play-Doh, that it kind of hardened and become crusty, you know. Medication is just getting a little moisture in there again, but then you still have to work it and sculpt it and change it, which is something that really can't be done without a trained professional advising you and leading you along.
Is your therapy ongoing at this point?
I see it as, certainly. You know, it's continued since college. I'm not actually working with Dr. Grayson personally. I work with another practitioner at his clinic, but, you know, I've been seeing him once a week, sometimes more since then.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, did you want to weigh in on? Okay, let's take another call. We have Lisa joining us from Haverford. Hi, Lisa, you're on Radio Times.
Hi, I'm calling about the fact that my son has OCD. He was misdiagnosed for basically 6 months, and since we found that he wasn't being helped, we took him to the Cottage Clinic at Penn, which is where Marty Franklin works, and I believe your guest just mentioned him. And within 6 visits of cognitive behavior therapy, my son was both diagnosed and treated and is an entirely new kid, able to basically deal with his life, manage his OCD, and it's just been a godsend within 6 weeks.
Thank you, Lisa, for that call. And Dr. Grayson, you mentioned before, when people get the diagnosis and the right therapy, the outlook is actually rather hopeful.
Yes, and you know, I'm so glad that it took 6 months for her, only because we've had people who've lost 17 years, and it's for no reason, you know, that... Sometimes it makes us look like we're brilliant because, you know, we're doing something in a very short time that something's had for 17 years, but really it's just we're doing the right treatment.
And Fletcher, Dr. Grayson mentioned the issue of competence and presenting mm-hmm. yourself while all of this is happening. You look to me perfectly calm, and you have the entire morning. Are you, or is this going on in your head?
Yeah, shucks, first of all. I have good days and bad days.
Mm-hmm.
I've a lot of anxiety just going through this week. A lot of stuff going on. A lot of responsibilities. There have been times when I've had to, you know, stand there and smile when just underneath the surface, you know, just tempest. Right now I'm doing fine. Thank you very much for asking.
How has your writing helped you? In college, you decided to come forward with your experience. Mm-hmm. You wrote an essay, which then morphed into this book. How does writing help or hurt or trigger?
Yeah, yeah.
Hence the name.
I mean, back at school, you know, I kind of got to be a little bit of a rock star for my final semester when I was publishing this, because no one had done anything like this before, and everyone was like, oh, you're so tormented and dark and deep, and I was like, yeah, you know. So that was fun. That was a good way to wrap up college. In a more general sense, in terms of writing the memoir, there's been a lot of stuff over the course of my life that is, in retrospect, obviously OCD, but that I didn't understand that way at the time, and that I didn't really ever have a chance to work through or comprehend or look back on. So it was sort of a chance to just go through my life and dredge up all these, you know, kind of pull out all these old scars and look at them again and kind of have a chance to come to terms with them.
And dredging up is not always a good thing, or Dr. Grayson, what's your take on that?
Well, I think understanding one's life it's not a bad thing to understand, oh, wow, this has been here a long time. I mean, I think you're asking, like, do we have to go into somebody's past to cure them? And, you know, a lot of OCD is work in the present, and there might be some other issues where some of that's useful. I mean, most of the time we're really concerned with the present and only with the past if it's affecting the present in some, you know, definite way.
Let's take another call. We have Sally joining us from Kittnersville. Hi, Sally. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, yes. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to call mainly the husband who has OCD, and we have three small children, and it does affect our marriage and our family life in terms of he doesn't like to go outside that much. He, you know, does dust in the carpet, doesn't want the kids to jump on the carpet. He, if you touch the mouse, you have to sanitize your hands. And he has a hard time, like, even trusting me with the kids. He always likes to, you know, check in and see how they're doing and make sure they're safe, because, like the previous caller said, he kind of gets, like, bad thoughts in his head of something happening and has to call and check in. So I was just going to see if there was a way. We've been to couples counseling, but I think it's more of an OCD than something else that can be treated.
Thank you, Sally, for that call. Dr. Grayson?
I mean, you bring up a really important point. I mean, what you're describing, I mean, I haven't seen him, but it really sounds very much like OCD. And if he's not going to choose to work on it directly, that's going to continue to be a problem. I'm sure that it feels for him absolutely necessary. But again, I mean, it's hard to give you direct advice other than he would need to see somebody who has worked with OCD, and if you're going to check around for therapists, the critical words they have to say is that they use exposure and response prevention. You could also check with the International OCD Foundation, because they'll have a list of therapists who say they work with OCD, and you can actually talk to someone there, and they'll tell you more information about that therapist if they really are on board.
And Fletcher, in your book, you describe a bit of your own struggles with accepting or not wanting treatment. At some points you were so ready, you just wanted them to basically wipe out your brain. Mm-hmm. At other points you were not willing. So describe how that changed over time, how much you wanted to be in treatment.
You know, again, I resisted treatment and therapy for so much of my childhood and young adulthood until, you know, I really sort of hit a crisis point. And I really just got to a point where I could not function anymore because the thoughts were so overpowering. And that was the point when I realized, okay, I need help. And I'm willing to do whatever horrible things these people are asking me to do for ERP in order to get better.
Let's take a very quick call from Julia. She's joining us from the main line. Hi, Julia. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, hello. I'm just calling. I'm a parent of a 19-year-old woman who has OCD, also borderline personality disorder and body dysmorphic disorder. She spent 6 months in a residential treatment facility called Rogers Memorial Hospital. It's in Wisconsin.
Sorry, we're running out of time, Julia. I'm sorry. So
the only thing I want to say is that as a parent, there's a couple of things that I would advise other parents. Number one, acceptance of the issue and understanding and telling your child that they are not their illness. The other thing is not to obviously feed into their obsessions, but recognize them. I understand that you're feeling like this. And number three, always just tell them, you know what, I love you no matter what, and we're going to get through this, and never, ever, ever losing faith in them. And it's never over, but they can deal with it.
Thank you, Julia, so much for that call. And Fletcher, you were nodding your head.
Julia, your daughter's very lucky to have you.
Thank you so much for that call. And Fletcher, what is next for you? We have about a minute left. So you're now at Temple University?
Yeah. No, I'm working on my MFA right now. Mm-hmm. I have a young adult novel, another couple of projects I'm kind of kicking around. And I'm in a sketch comedy group with actually a number of my friends from Swarthmore. We're called The Disappointments. So,
how has humor helped you? You don't, obviously, in your sketch comedy, whatever you're struggling with doesn't come into play, but
right.
Your humor is very evident in the book. So how does that help you?
Yeah, you know, I it's just always been my way of approaching stuff, you know, and coping with it is by learning to laugh.
Thank you so much. We've been talking with writer Fletcher Wortman. His new book is Triggered, a memoir of obsessive-compulsive disorder. And we were also joined by Dr. Jonathan Grayson, director of the Anxiety and OCD Treatment Center of Philadelphia. Thank you so much, Dr. Grayson,
Thank
for
you.
Joining us. I'm Maiken Scott, in for Marty Moskowain, and you've been listening to Radio Times.